I revised my title somewhat to make it the longest title I've ever used. I apologize for that. Let me explain my title. Over the last 6 weeks, I have had 3 or 4 interesting experiences that are all the same. The experience was, just to give you one example, I was asked to write an article for this, in this case, the Texas Tribune, specifically about Christians and climate change. But I was not told that they would be publishing my article side by side with another article by an oil company lobbyist who packed the most amount of disinformation into 800 words that I've ever seen. If there's a prize for brevity, he would win it. It was that impressive. This didn't just happen to me with this organization. It happened to me with a Christian colleague at a university. It happened with a Christian publisher. And it happened with a couple of other, all in the same time frame. So over the last 6 weeks, I've spent a lot of time thinking about the arguments that each one of them presented to me, which were the same argument. And this is what it was. We should present both sides of the science. Both sides here meaning that it's real and it's not, that it's humans and it isn't. Because that's what people, fill in the blank depending on who you're talking to, believe. But, I was told, if my opinion, which is actually not an opinion, it's my this peer-reviewed science that I summarize, if the opinion of peer-reviewed science is correct, then it will convince the readers. I really struggled with this, because as a scientist, we are suckers for the information deficit model, right? If someone doesn't know something, we will tell them the facts and we will convince them because we are educators and we're scientists. But the conclusion I came to is that this is a bit of a slippery slope. Now, before I go any farther, let me just be clear on what I'm not saying, because I know there's probably somebody sitting here who's going to get really mad and go write a blog post about what I didn't say. That actually did happen last time at ASA, but I ended up contacting her and having a fantastic conversation with her, and now we're actually great friends. So, try me. I'm actually a good friend. I am not saying that scientists shouldn't argue about climate science, because if there wasn't anything to argue about, we wouldn't have a job. All of our research is about what we don't know. There's massive uncertainties in climate science. Yes, there are. I'm not saying that we should drink any type of Kool-Aid, fill in whatever you don't like there. I filled in a few of the popular ones in Texas, where I live right now, although originally I'm from up the road in Toronto. What I am saying is that I think it's wrong to misrepresent nearly 200 years of peer-reviewed research just because we don't feel in our hearts it could be right, or we object to the solutions, or somebody we don't like says it is true. Especially, and this is where the moral perspective comes in, especially when the risks are pretty high. Now, risk doesn't imply certainty, but risk says, let's be careful, let's be cautious, let's try to make sure that we don't end up on the operating table with open heart surgery just because we thought our doctor was a shill for the pharmaceutical companies when he told us to start taking a cholesterol-reducing drug. So, I'm going to present 3 perspectives here that I've been wrestling with over the last few weeks. The first is scientific, and I'll spend the most time here since I am a scientist and most of us are. Presenting 2 realities, 2 views about the reality of this issue, not 2 views about the issue itself, 2 views about whether it's real or not, is incorrect and harmful is my first argument. What do I mean by that? Well, here's the science of climate change. It's pretty basic. When we burn a carbon-containing fuel, it combines with oxygen to produce carbon dioxide. We know that ever since the Industrial Revolution, we've been burning a lot of this stuff. We actually have records of how much we've burned. We have records of what's in the atmosphere, how much has gone into the biosphere, how much has gone into the ocean. Down the street at U of T, when I was in my 3rd year university, I put CO2 in a tube, I shone a laser through it, and I measured the infrared absorptive capacity of CO2. We know it traps heat in the atmosphere, and as an undergrad, we can measure how much it traps. We know that our atmosphere has this amazing natural greenhouse effect that we are artificially exacerbating by putting too much CO2 into the atmosphere, more than would naturally be there over this time scale. The time scale over which fossil fuels will release their carbon to the atmosphere is millions of years. We're doing it over decades. And that's the problem. We're speeding up a natural cycle. It's no surprise that this is causing the Earth to warm. This is global temperature, and that is CO2. There's not a one-to-one correspondence, because there's not a one-to-one correspondence between the burger you eat and the cholesterol buildup in your arteries. There's not a one-to-one correspondence between a single cigarette and whether you get lung cancer. It's a cumulative effect. The more we have, the stronger the reaction. We've known about this for a really long time. The original papers on the greenhouse effect were published in the early 1800s. The first climate model was calculated by hand in 1890 by that man in the middle, a Swedish chemist. It took him 2 years and his wife left him. Let that be a lesson. Take breaks. Again, because we are scientists, again, there are definitely important uncertainties in climate science, and I spend most of my time studying and talking about the uncertainties. Uncertainties come from four sources that we know about very well. We know that natural variability is a huge source of uncertainty, particularly over timescales shorter than 20 to 30 years. We know that climate models are not perfect. Those of us who work with them know even more than anybody else how imperfect they are, and we're constantly trying to improve them. We know that the decisions that we make today and in the future have a huge impact on the change we're going to see, because how much carbon affects how much change. And we know that what's going to happen here in Hamilton in response to global change is also a huge uncertainty, and that's one of the areas I spend most of my time on. In fact, on Monday I'm going off to Buenos Aires for a WMO, World Meteorological Organization workshop, on uncertainty number 4. What I am saying, though, is that there are inappropriate uncertainties. Is climate changing? Are humans responsible? Is there risk of impacts? Is there anything sensible we can do about it? There is years of peer-reviewed science and data to say that, yes, climate is changing. And so when we look at, for example, global temperature, and we pick our favorite time period, we can make it do whatever we want. The reality is we have to look at all the data. And we have to look at even more data. And we can look at more data going back as far as we like to try to understand what is happening to our planet. And then we try to attribute it. And here's something that you might not have ever heard. If you look at what percentage of the warming we've seen over these periods is attributable to human influence, did you know that several peer-reviewed papers, pretty much all the peer-reviewed papers on this topic, it's really hard to do, that's why there's not that many, show that between 90 to over 100% of the warming is due to human activities, and we would actually be getting cooler right now if it weren't for all the CO2 we're putting in the atmosphere. Here's the problem, though. This information isn't getting out. This is on CNN last year. 70% of the information on climate science was correct, but 30% was incorrect. If you look at other networks, the ratio is a little different. This is important, though, because understanding that scientists do agree has been shown by this research group here. Ed Maybach's research group at George Washington has shown that this is one of the most important messages that changes people's opinion about climate change. And that is why Mario Molina, who was mentioned by our previous commentator before, Mario Molina just spearheaded this effort by the AAAS to show that what we know about climate science. This is a fantastic resource. It features videos by about 8 of us climate scientists, and here's the cool thing. Nobody said this, but I looked at the videos. 4 of us are Christians. Isn't that cool? 4 of us are Christians, and we didn't say anything about it, but we're there because we feel like it's important, and that's what I'll get to next. So my first point is that presenting climate change as we're not sure if it's real or not propagates the myth that the reality is uncertain in the literature. It encourages the idea that my opinion is the same as your fact, and it delays the efforts to reduce the impact we're having on our planet. Let's get into 2 more, though, just very briefly. That was the longest for everybody who's watching their watch. From a social science perspective, and this is what I love reading these days, I love reading social science. From a social science perspective, more information is not necessarily the answer. As scientists, we often feel like if we just write one more report, one more, that's all that's needed is one more. Well, this is number 5, and I don't think it's done it. In fact, the situation is worse now than it was when number one was written. We have a model that believes that the public is willing and available to process information if it's available. Lack of public support is caused by lack of information. So Dan Kahan, who's a wonderful researcher who also looks just like Dwight from The Office, if anybody watches The Office, published this paper saying, let's see if this is true. It's often attributed to a deficit in comprehension. People don't know enough information. So, being a good scientist, he conducted a study to test. He found no support. He found members of the public with the highest degrees of science literacy, were not the most concerned about climate change. Rather, they were the ones among whom cultural polarization was greatest. Public divisions over climate change stem not from incomprehension of science, but from personal interest, forming beliefs in line with those held by others with whom we share close ties. Whoa. So let's talk about Christians now. Here's the thing, though, with Christians. From a theological perspective, the resistance to the science of climate change didn't arise naturally from the Christian community. It's difficult for anybody to argue the imperative of stewardship and of loving others. But if we look at, I was just in Deb Harsman's talk, and some of you maybe were and came over here, she showed a very similar chart for evolution. I'm showing the same one for climate change. If you look at what people think about climate change, here are the white evangelicals down at the bottom. Only 34% would agree that there's solid evidence that the Earth is warming, and it's humans. But I would argue it doesn't have anything to do with our perspective on God, the Bible, or our Christian faith. Even organizations like the Cornwall Alliance, who are about as far as possible from the peer-reviewed literature as you can be on climate science, they state right out that the moral necessity of ecological stewardship has become increasingly clear. We're not arguing about stewardship. So what are we arguing about? Well, here is the interesting thing. A colleague of mine called John Evans compared people and found, oh yes, okay, he's not a Christian, so he calls us fundamentalists, which I told him I do not like that word. Fundamentalist Protestants are less likely to believe climate science, but controlling for other demographics show that it's not being a Protestant that causes that to happen. Almost done. It is our age, our political conservatism, and our adherence to a political party that accounts for what we think about climate change. And when you look at a Gallup poll, I know this is kind of faint, it asks, do you think the seriousness of this issue is exaggerated? 68% of Republicans do, and only 18% of Democrats. So it isn't us Christians who don't think it's real, it's political conservatives. So these are my three things I would posit for further discussion and feedback. And I would just close by saying, why do I care though? As opposed to the head, let's talk about the heart. Why do I care? I care because I actually do research on climate impacts, and this is what our research shows. Then, when I look to the Bible, I see verses like loving God and loving others, loving Christ like he loved us. So based on our faith, and based on God's creation, I stand on the idea that we don't have a spirit of fear. We have a spirit of power and of love for each other and of a sound mind to make good decisions with real information that we get from this amazing creation that God has gifted us with. Thank you. I think that one thing the internet has done is it has encouraged the idea that opinions are equal to facts. It has also encouraged a lot of very unpleasant discourse. Because if you have somebody standing right in front of you and they call you a liar, a cheat, a thief, and a molester of data, you might be tempted to respond. But if they do so from a safe distance, they're a lot bolder in those type of attacks. So the times I've had somebody say something nasty to my face, I can count on one hand. The number of attacks I've had remotely, we would need every single finger on campus. So I think it's a big deal. Do you have? Okay.
You seem to indicate that the association is politically conservative. What about the economics? Isn't necessarily the title of the politics, but I would think the economics is very important.
Economics are really important. And that's why I think the best research right now is on how much it's going to cost to reduce our emissions and how much damages we're going to avoid by doing so. There's a great report that just came out led by Michael Bloomberg from New York, who is conservative. He led a report called Risky Business, where they actually, from a business perspective, analyzed climate change and talked about why, as a business people, they would care about it. And that, I think, is some of the most important work that's going on right now, is the economics. Yeah.
I appreciate your sharing here and many of the other talks on TV, the circles that we did on, and I know that probably has a personal cost, time-wise, but also just training. Mm-hmm. I want to personally just make a very good point that this is important. Oh. Yeah, I can speak out as a scientist. I also agree that this is an important issue, and it is real-time data there, but it's people like you that are climate scientists that are really the experts, and we need to get that. And to me, it is really sad that Christians are the lagging group, the conservative groups against the top, and that's wrong. And we spiritually, biblically, we need to wake up and say, no, we're wrong. We need to admit that.
It's not easy, though. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Thank you.